Transformational leadership is getting to a place where as you interact with your team, you're growing their capacity to solve problems. Eventually, they'll do it themselves without coming to you, because by slowing down, doing the research, finding the three viable option recommendation, they're not even going to bring it to your attention.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summer Strive, Jim and Jamie back here again. And we're with a repeat friend who I know had a huge, huge response on his last episode, Dan Martell. Dan, how's it going, bud?
I'm doing incredible. It's good to see you guys. Always like it in person better, but the internet will do.
Our next trip will be Costa Rica together, for sure. We'll have to make that happen.
Can't wait.
Yes. And a fun surprise today. This arrived in the mail, your new book. And you said,
I can't believe you got it first. You guys literally may be the first people in the world to get it.
Like, what are the chances that we happen to get it literally 40
today,
right before we got it?
Oh, wow.
But I do feel lucky because this is so applicable to what the things I'm working on in business right now, and I know it always spills over to the personal life, but when we saw you this summer, so again, quick background for the audience, Dan and I met 10 or 11 years ago, mastermind talks, we were both speaking. I know that the family board meeting strategy is big for his family. His word integration, everyone hears me say Dan, like I grab onto words, and that word that you taught me has been huge for a shift in just the overall.
We use it so often. I mean, even when we're making big decisions, I'm like, hun, we can either be fully integrated or we can be fully separate, you know? And it's just, it's such a big word in our house. So thank you for that.
And that was Dan. And then we became friends, spent time. Dan hosted us up in Canada and some of our summer RV adventures.
And he like kicked our kids' butt in soccer. It was kind of awkward. Dan, he like stood on top of them.
Do you remember that final shot? I talk shit all the way.
I think it was a left foot too. Maybe I'm exaggerating like how epic it was, but I thought it was with my left foot, opposite foot. But that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The boys didn't talk to us for like 2 hours because I think they thought there was going to be a let up. But you know,
they were like, I need a rematch with that guy.
Yeah. Anytime. So, I don't know. They're getting big now. I think I'd be in trouble.
They are. They're about your size now. So, but we love you. You've been a great source of inspiration and knowledge for us. And seeing Buyback Time this summer, this was huge for me because I fall into this trap that you talk about where I'm just saying yes, saying yes, saying yes as an owner or CEO. And that's not a good thing. It feels like you're doing something noble, but you're really not. And that was one of the biggest takeaways. And a few of the things that I'm sure we'll get into today have been huge. But why did you write this, Dan? Why did you write Buy Back Your Time?
I wrote it because I'm like very passionate pro entrepreneur. Like to this day, continuously am in awe of anybody that wakes up and creates a business because they're essentially trying to make the rest of the world a better place for every other human that's living. Like, I mean, that's business. Like, you don't have a business if you're not solving problems, and you don't create value if you don't solve problems. So, and then growing up in a small town and all my friends, I'm in software. A lot of people know me as like the software guy, but all my best friends, like all of them, and many of them, you know, from MMT, they're predominantly in other business industries, local services and agencies and HVAC and bike shops and all these, you know, the normal crew, right? Restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I just, over the years, and I just thought it's because maybe software is different, that I felt like I had a rhythm for how I grew and scaled companies that might've only been applicable to software. And it wasn't until I started teaching on my YouTube channel and then kind of helping my friends that I realized that it was actually the way they were approaching their decisions for essentially buying back their time, or what I call the buyback principle. And it was this philosophy of you don't hire people to grow the business. You hire people to buy back your time as a CEO. And then with that new time, you actually will have more capacity to grow the business. But the alternative is not true. Because I know a lot of people that hire folks to try to grow their business, but then they wake up one day, and I call it the pain line. They hit a point where the business they thought they were creating ends up being a energy sucker, a time sucker, a absolutely the opposite of the freedom they were striving for. And usually I get the call because they either want to sell, sabotage, or stall their growth. And I wrote the book because I have a very unique perspective that comes from Silicon Valley, software, high growth companies that is 100% applicable and transferable to every entrepreneur, no matter what stage they're at in their business, to help them do more with less in a way that will actually give them more freedom and make them more money. Like, it's mathematically proven. You can't, you know, $10 million companies were not built off $10 tasks. It's just, okay, well, when I start and I don't have money, how do I even think about my time, or how do I trade it? How do you become a better time trader? Time trading is actually the game we're all in.
Like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Time trading. And we just had a conversation, you and I, today, and
where we $10 an hour work.
Yes. And so,
is there any spot that, God forbid, I'd be making $10 an hour work? Because,
and you have to really look at the whole picture, because there's things he's like, well, it was worth it when it was this. And I'm like, okay. And on the front end, it was that. But then on the back end, it was that. So let's add those two clusterfucks together. Now, was it worth your time? And so it's just so interesting, because you used to say it before. I mean, before I even saw Dan's talk
on the family side.
So that was one thing I want to bring back too.
$10 an hour work.
Right.
We can't do this if we're going to have an incredible family life. That stuff, we got to pay out.
Yeah. So things like, after hearing your talk, or in your talk, I was emailing your assistant, who's amazing and on the spot and fast. And she definitely knows your material because she gets it handled. But so looking over your list, it was a reminder of your house manager, I guess, because you have a couple of different lists. And I'm in both realms, between work and then in the home. But I remember looking at your list and thinking of, okay, yeah, we're good at that. We're good at, oh, no, I didn't think about doing that, or systemizing the things. And it was something that Jim used to all the time try to encourage me to delegate those type of house roles out. And I thought, oh, but gosh, then who am I? I'm not the homemaker and I'm not the this. And he's like, you're the fun maker. Like, you get to do the magic. You get to show up for the kids. You get to enjoy those moments with them instead of, oh, hang on a second, let me change the filter. Oh, hang on a second, let me, you know, clean out the fridge or whatever it may be. But just, so it's awesome that your buyback idea isn't just for business.
No, the last chapter in the book is actually called The Buyback Lifestyle, because I really wanted, obviously, to address the entrepreneurial community and CEOs and founders and business owners. But like, the biggest ROI for my life, when we talk about integration, has come from the personal side, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, when people start, I think, Jamie, like, they go, well, I can't afford like a house manager. What is that? I can't even comprehend that. We don't start there, right? Like, when I started, it was laundry, house cleaning, meal prep. That's it. Like, and I was in my 20s. And I realized, like, and now back then I was a workaholic. So I was like, I would rather, you know, be at my office on Sunday morning than doing my yard work or whatever, right? Now, that wasn't healthy either. So I've learned some different approaches and principles of life. But when you start, because I've coached a lot of women entrepreneurs, and they're the hardest on themselves. Like, that's the, you know, I feel like the guilt, and I deal with it all, right? It's, I don't feel worthy. I feel guilty. My mom, like, my mother is like, and I hear this from I'm like, why is that a blocker? And they say, well, I don't want my mom to find out that I can't manage my household, because she already thinks that I'm over my head in my business. So if she finds out that somebody else is making my kids' lunches, like, that'll, I just don't know if I can even have that conversation with her. And I'm like, wow, that's real. Like, I get that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So a lot of the stuff that I think can add the most ROI, and my real estate agent called it ROL. When we were buying a house, he goes, well, that's an ROL. And I was like, what's ROL? He's like, return on lifestyle. He's like, you're not going to make any money back from the pool, but that's a good ROL. And I'm like,
oh, I like that.
That's
good. Yeah. But if you think about that for your home life, it's, you know, Renee and I have gotten to a point where we would, because we have the means, and again, we don't start there, but we've gotten there, that we just want to do one of two things. We either want to spend time doing things only we can do creatively, uniquely in our businesses, or spend time with people we love. Right? Be the joy makers, right? Yeah. The fun maker. And anytime I catch myself putting stuff together, running errands, cleaning stuff, maintenance stuff, purchasing stuff, travel stuff, like, I have to like make the list. And I have a meeting with our house manager and I say, could you please take these over? Like, and what's fun is when you ask somebody to support you, and it sounds weird, because again, it's like, I remember I was sharing this with a friend, and he goes, what are you, a king? And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, you have servants like a king. And I'm like, come. I go, what I have is the ability to ask people for support, and they're incredibly well compensated. So I'm creating employment in my community. And I think I'm a pretty good dude to work for, which means they're happy that they have the opportunity. and we treat them like family and we all win. Like that's the cool part about creating a business that employs people is the entity is winning. It's serving the market. It's solving a problem out there. It's creating employment in your community. And you're actually building something that you don't grow to hate. And that's the biggest problem with businesses is most of them grow to hate them. And then they shut them down. And all those people, all that employment, that market, that community suffers because of it. And it was 100% avoidable.
Yeah. I mean, that sabotage, like you talked about, is real. Of course, that, you know, kicked me in the ribs. Like, oh, I've been there.
That was me.
You know, where and myself.
Yeah. It wasn't sabotage. It was Jamie.
Yeah, right. A little of both. No. So, but it's something that we have a choice on, though. And I think there was some sort of programming, like, if we do that, we're not down to earth. By getting support, we've been able to be more down to earth than ever. Sitting and talking with our kids, taking adventures, making plans that, you know, we've worked really hard and most families can't do now. And that has been worth its weight in gold. But it took a little bit of reteaching, because I know you're not coming from some huge trust fund, neither are we. And so there was a reprogramming. I'm sure, do you see that a lot with people?
That is the work. That's why I wrote a book and it's not a conversation, because I had to systematically, like when I outlined my book, I wrote down every objection and every nuance, every belief, every saying, like even giving the language to build a new belief, like the word support. Like I had one of my clients, Aaron, his wife was against having somebody clean, but yet he was struggling because she was complaining she didn't have time to go to the gym. And he's like, babes, I love you. If you just allow us to have somebody come into the house 5-6 hours a week to take over the deep cleaning stuff, you can still do the other things so that you know it's done right. But like you said, anybody can take a fridge apart and clean the inside of a fridge or an oven or dust the whole house, like all the deep cleaning stuff. And she was against it. And I said, try this. Say like, don't you want to support your community? And there's an opportunity. Somebody like in your city right now is looking for work and you have an opportunity. And because you're not willing to overcome your limiting beliefs around that, you're not creating an opportunity for that person to support you. And that was the thing that got her to finally try it. And that's the other thing, is just try it.
Yeah.
Like meal prep's a funny one for people. They're like, I can cook my own food. It's like, there's tangential value to this. It's not just the meal prep. It's, hey, I eat 100% of the macros and nutrients that I need because I'm not sitting down and wondering what I'm going to eat. It's already designed. So like I'm healthier because of it. It's less decision fatigue. There's no arguments, right? We know what we're eating for dinner. We all like the food. It gets us the nutrients we need. It creates employment. It saves us a ton of time from going to grocery shops to put the meals together. And then we get to sit down and do the thing that we actually want to do, which is break bread as a family. And we do that every night. And that's the part that's non-negotiable. How that meal ends up on our table, that's not part of it. Unless, and I do get it, some people are like, if you choose to do something, like if I have a certain person over and I want to cook for them because that's my love language, that's the way I express myself, do that. But if at any point in doing that, you don't have time to do the things you want to do in your life, that's where you have to do an audit and look at your calendar and figure out, you know, because some things that used to be a green for me, like lights me up. And that's kind of the framework in the book. I teach the takes your energy versus gives you energy versus makes you money versus, you know,
the audit, the buyback.
Yeah, the audit, time and energy audit.
I love that.
When I started, there was things on there that were green and I did them for 3 years and they turned red.
Isn't that funny?
Okay. Yeah. Because you're just like, I've done this so many times. Like I used to enjoy it. It doesn't bring me a lot of value. It's not complicated. I'd rather not do this anymore. Give yourself permission to stop.
I think that happened with Jamie, and because like we had the meal prep come in and it was huge. It was for 4 days a week. She's like, but I love to do that. I feel like I should do that for my family. But when we started to bring in the meal prep, like you said, no wondering, no guesswork. Oh, it's getting late. Healthy. You know, we picked the things ahead of time.
We saved money.
We saved. But then you're also planting in the garden. You're on the beach more with the kids. There was like,
I just planned this.
Yeah. Just some really cool.
But Sundays were all for me to be able to make, like you're saying, I was still able to choose the one day a week that I wanted to
teach kids to design it.
Veggies and do whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. It's your way of nurturing your family. Like I get it. Like I'm not like, you know, I grew up where my dad, you know, he owned rental properties and every Sunday he would go mow them. I would have rather him throw a baseball with me. Yeah, never did. Too busy. And he said, well, I like to do it. And I remember one day I was a little older, a little wiser. not that wise, but a little older. And I say, well, if you like doing it so much, why don't you do the neighbors? Wow. And he goes, well, I don't like doing it that much. And I go, exactly. You don't actually like doing it. This is a story you tell yourself. Like, if you like doing it, then you would do more of it. Like, I love this. I love talking to people like yourselves that inspire me, that teach me stuff and show me like this next level of like thoughtfulness around life. Like, sign me up for another hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 3 days going to, like, you know what I mean? But a lot of people say they like doing stuff that, you know, at the grand scheme of things, you add a zero to the amount of times I got to do it. It turns from green to red real fast. Big so fast. I just want to give people a perspective of like, not only is this healthy for your mindset, your personal health, your relationship with your family, relationship with your team, like creating the space for you to recharge is important because, and I'm not a 4-hour work week guy. Like, I'm not saying do this to go hang out on the beach and watch Netflix. The subtitle of my book, the last part is, and build your empire. I actually want people to express their art more, to create more, to be a brighter light in the world, to solve bigger problems. Because in doing that, you know, I really think all we're here to do is to grow and contribute. Like, that's really, I think, like, I don't know. I think I've figured out, like, every person on earth, if you're human and you're listening to this, you are, is to become the best version of yourself and share that person with the world.
Yeah. Well said. Well said.
That's it. Just like, so I want you to have time to do that.
You can't do it either if you have no time. If there's no time for the artwork, how can you be an artist?
And to improve, right? So that's the part of like the audit, transfer, fill. And I talk about the buyback loop. The fill part is working on, I call it the three areas. It's like a ladder of success. There's the skills. What's the next level of skills I got to develop? The beliefs, that's on the right side. And then the character traits. If what I want to achieve is like a far above my comfort zone and what it's possible today, I got to build this ladder through the skills, beliefs, and character traits to become the person who can deal with that level of success and solve those problems and contribute to my community. And I just think like, that is a fun conversation to have. It's so tough for me when people are like, I just don't have time. And I'm like, you have time. You actually are not deciding to make it. So let's have that conversation. Because if we looked at your calendar, you're going to tell me through the activities what you prioritize. So there's what you're telling me is important to you and what you're doing with your calendar. And those things are not usually aligned.
Yeah, I think one thing too, Dan, that we really align on, I mean, I love your buyback loop. Jamie and I call it taking inventory. And it's something we didn't do. You know, the audit, you call it the audit, taking inventory, audit. So many of us don't want to stop and take inventory. We don't want to audit the situation. Like you said, and I love it's red or green, which it is.
Yellow.
Yeah, like you're like red or green. But people are like, God, I'm just too busy. There's no way. If they'll stop and breathe and get that awareness. But there is some real facing of the truth when you take time to audit. And I think that's, I used to avoid it. I think we both used to. And it's one of the most liberating things that I think that I love that being the starting point of your buyback loop because it is the foundation, really.
How often do you take audit?
I do it now. I think it's a byproduct of how dynamic your life is. I do it every 4 months. And the reason why, like, I mean, this year,
that's impressive. Yeah, I mean, every 4 months, so three times
every
a year.
I have to, and I'll tell you why. I'm the CEO of two companies. So I got High Speed Ventures, which is my investment company, and then SaaS Academy, which is the largest coaching company for CEOs of software companies. And I did 3 Ironmans this summer. We've got family commitments. I'm very involved in my community, my church. So it's like the more, and now, maybe it's a desire to do more that like I have to do it because I'm aware of my capacity. I'm always asking myself, how do I create more? And I know it's through the buyback loop. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, I'll like every 4 months, I'll do a deep time and energy audit. And then I'll figure out, is there team members I got to just renegotiate agreements? Because usually a lot of it, honestly, is that it's I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. And I need to then have a conversation with somebody on my team to hand the thing back to them. And if you ever never heard the book called The 1 Minute Manager Meets the Monkey, it's a very powerful book because he talks about taking on other people's monkeys. And it's easy and we don't even know we're doing it, right? We're talking to somebody and we'll say something like, just send it over. I'll look at it and get back to you.
We had this conversation in the sauna today.
And that happened.
If you see my elbow, my ribs being elbowed right now, look at the smile.
Like the shit-eating grin on my face.
She has a shit-eating grin. Trying not to talk. Yeah, and I've read the one-minute manager, but not the monkey part.
It's monkey. It's mandatory for all my leaders because, yeah, especially if you're an individual contributor, like that's how you operate. You're eager. You take things over. You help your manager. You help your boss. But as a leader, it actually creates a bottleneck for you and the team. And there's a framework that they teach that I talk about in the book. There's some leadership principle I shared in the book because I wanted to teach this, like the 1-3-1 principle, right? The 1-3-1 principle is, and I did it just now. I just got off my house manager. I have a meeting every Wednesday with my house manager, my executive assistant, my wife, Renee. She says hi, by the way. She might even stop and I told her. Yeah. And we review stuff. And when people present you challenges, like questions. So my house manager asked me, she had a challenge and she asked me what I wanted to do. And I politely reminded her to present a 1-3-1. And now she didn't have time and she didn't think of it, but she knows what it is because I've coached her on it. And 1-3-1 is one specific problem, 3 recommendations or 3 options, viable options, and 1 recommendation.
All right, and the reason I say that again, because this is so good. I want to make sure.
So important.
And everyone hears it.
So anytime somebody comes to you with a question, if they report to you, they're essentially asking you indirectly to do their work, right? Like they're stuck. I have a problem. What do you want me to do? What I like to say is I flip it back. I give them back the monkey and I say, it's your monkey. We can talk about it, but to talk about it, here's essentially the passcode to bring it to my attention, which is let's be clear and define what the problem is we're talking about. Because a lot of times that's a problem. I want you to do some work ahead of time to come up with 3 viable options for solving that problem. And then I want you to recommend the option that you think is most viable.
Which one? I love it.
Yep. And usually 90% of the time when they do this, you literally will go, I agree, do that. Now, here's why it's powerful is because the more often you slow the conversation down to prompt them to go do that and they come back, they'll eventually just do that on their own.
Yes.
And that's the power of it. That's why I call it transformational leadership versus transactional management. Transformational leadership is getting to a place where as you interact with your team, you're growing their capacity to solve problems.
Yeah.
And the 3 options, why it's important, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I just want to know somebody thought through things. That's it. Like I actually, it's not even like I need them to do it. At a certain point, eventually, honestly, like my direct reports have 2, like my CEO and my CRO, like they don't need to do 1-3-1. They just tell me what they're doing. And for the most part, I'm like, that sounds really smart. I'm really impressed you came up with that. Okay, cool. But when you got new people and they're still trying to figure out the rhythm, the 1-3-1 really helps them develop their problem solving skills. And then eventually they'll do it themselves without coming to you because by just slowing down, doing the research, finding the 3 viable option recommendation, it's a clear winner. They're not even going to bring it to your attention. They're not going to write it down in the agenda to discuss, right? And that's how you
do it themselves.
Yeah.
And so that's how you scale teams. Yeah.
This is so applicable right now. So I haven't even talked to you. So as you know, I was venture in a building company.
We are recording.
So yeah, that's okay. This is all public knowledge now.
But you know, just a bunch of friends having a conversation off the record.
Yeah, with 15,000 people listening.
But yeah.
No, but you know, for our real estate investment company, I've had a joint venture with a building partner for a number of years, and we just really meshed together. Our skill sets were super complementary, and so we merged last month and became a partner in the building company, which is a bigger step up for me. And, you know, it's got some real legs to it, but I'm stepping into these new things where it's now I'm this person where I don't want to be wearing a fire hat, and I'm known for sales and being able to work through difficult situations, but I don't want to be Dr. Phil. So this is really important to me. So I can see, cause I was just in meetings yesterday of things where I'm like, okay, I wish I had been able to say, okay, let's come back on 1-3-1 on this. So I love this. This is really applicable.
Yeah, well, I had to add it to the book, Jim and Jamie, because I don't know if you knew this, but CEOs and entrepreneurs are crazy. Did you guys know this? That they're little nutty, little cuckoo?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. You ever seen that thing Cameron Harold does when he's like, hey, do you have this? Do you have this? And it was like...
Yeah, essentially, this is like the bipolar, whatever. It's like you have schizophrenic, insomnia, all these things. So what happened was, I teach you the framework. I help you understand the buyback rate. I help you understand how to replace yourself, all these things. But then you are still you with the people. And if I didn't create there's three specific frameworks I taught, and I had to add them because I knew if I didn't, people would buy back their time and then just fire the people, or buy back their time and people would quit, right? Because I needed it. It's almost like I had to put the antidote to the thing I knew was going to happen, because every CEO starts, and because they're nobody's ever taught them, like they do a transactional management style. Tell them what to do, check they got done, tell them what to do next, right? And it's a loop. And like, it sounds logical. You say this out loud and you're like, what else are you supposed to do?
Yeah,
I don't tell people what to do. I literally say, here's this outcome that I used to own. I used to wear a hat. You know, I started a business, you got 17 hats, and then you kind of like take a hat off and you give it to a person and you take another hat off. Like, we got to take the monkeys and put them on other people's backs and then tell them how to take care of the monkey.
Yeah.
And maybe put some insurance on the monkey. And then that's the relationship we're going to have. So I added this stuff just to help people avoid the biggest fear they have when they bring on people or they delegate stuff is like, what if the person doesn't perform? Truth is they're not going to perform the way you would. 80% done by somebody else is 100% freaking awesome though.
Yes, it's just like raising children. You know, people are like, wait, your 7-year-old does dishes. Isn't it this? And I'm like, I don't give a shit where the silverware ends up as long as it's not in the dishwasher.
Renegotiate the expectations, right? No, and that's like a lot of people, they just have a hard time with that. They're like, if I teach this person and then they don't do it right, it's going to drive me nuts. Okay, let's talk about it driving you nuts. And let's create a rhythm for communication where you feel not nuts, because I know how you're going to react if you feel like somebody's not performing to your level, and you're going to be hypercritical. You're going to be rude. You're going to potentially scream at somebody. Like, I had a coaching client, and we do 360 interviews when I bring on a new client with their executive team. And the feedback I got was atrocious. And it was very simple. I called the CEO and I said, if I ever hear you do any of these three things ever again, you're out. Like, there's no three strikes. And dude, you're horrible for doing this. I get where it came from. Cause like, again, entrepreneurs we're built by being able to deal with a high level of uncertainty, usually because we went through some level of trauma and chaos as a kid. Mm-hmm. And but then that can be a superpower and an Achilles heel in the same breath.
Yeah,
and it usually ends up as an Achilles heel in response to how you interact with people. And that's where a lot of the growing pains for CEOs, it's self-inflicted emotional shrapnel from the way they show up and communicate.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the switch it can make. Like for you, Dan, let's go back to old Dan of clarity and Dan of SaaS. Like what is, and with the lens of buy back your time, what's the difference? Is this
totally different? Difference?
Yeah.
I learned to lead definitely. I was doing a bit, I probably learned. So two companies ago, Flowtown is where I learned how to do transformational leadership. I read a book by Andy Grove, the founder of Intel, and he called it MBOs, management by outcomes. And I kind of took a different approach to it. And I actually brought in Ethan to be the CEO because like I was like, okay, I want to try a different approach to building a company. You're CEO. I was non-employee co-founder. Eventually, I became a team member and I ran growth. And it was a beautiful relationship because that was when I like got to play with letting go of control. Even though I own half the company as a co-founder, Ethan was CEO. So it meant like technically, he's CEO. So he had to make final decisions on a lot of stuff that otherwise I would make. And I had to learn that. Like it's this weird thing. It's like kind of like with kids. It's like the first time they go off to daycare and you're just like, oh, my heart's running outside my body. And I'm so nervous. And then you pick them up and you're like, okay, that worked out. Maybe day two, that works out again. And eventually you just kind of like, oh, okay, there's another, you know, I can relax now. And I feel like the big thing that I've gotten to, because now I buy companies, hire CEOs, and they run them. So like, that's a completely different, you want to talk about buying back your time. It's like buy back the whole thing, right? Yeah. And what I've gotten good at is understanding the rhythm and infrastructure required for me to sleep well at night, but also know that there's the checks and balances in place. And here's what I've learned is nobody means to do something bad. Like a lot of times when bad things happen in a business, it's not because somebody woke up and said, I'm going to go do bad. They just got too far down a strategy and they were like, I think it's going to work out. And I know it's not great. And I know the P&L is bleeding, but it's going to turn a corner and the big deal is going to happen. And the whole thing's just going to be magic and just trust in the rhythm. And like, so now I've just built, and this is the skills, beliefs, and character traits, right? Like I've just gotten to a level where I'm able to design a infrastructure for people to support me at a company ownership level where they run a company I own and I don't have to be the CEO. And then what's the reporting structure look like? And what's the cadence in communication? And what's considered a 1-3-1? Because that's the other thing is you get to a point where, you know, like I just had to remind my executive team at SaaS Academy that they're allowed to make any decision that's less than $5,000. Like that's just a blanket rule. I talk about it in the book. It's called the $50 fix, but it's different numbers for different levels. So senior leadership team, it's 5,000. Team leads, it's 500. And then individual contributors, 100. They literally should not and do not need permission to solve a problem that's under that amount. The only thing that I ask of them is afterwards, they have to post to their team that they made the decision. That's the only kicker. So
why do you do that?
Because there needs to be a feedback loop, right? Okay. Somebody can't be going off every 10 days doing a $5,000 decision without, you know, like these are not strategic, these are response to problems. If people are having multiple $5,000 problems,
problem.
I need a feedback loop to know, hey, we should sit down and discuss why this is happening. Because if not, you know, it's funny because one time, one of my videographers was waiting on our designer to get some thumbnail stuff done. And again, $100 fix. He went on Fiverr and hired somebody and got it done.
There you go.
But he didn't tell anybody. And then all of a sudden the video gets published and then the designer sees it and goes, who designed that? And he's all like, oh, I just hired this person on Fiverr. Then he's pissed off because it didn't follow the template, blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of like interesting because he had the right to be upset. But the way I kind of explained it to the team, and this is kind of back to your, like, how have I evolved as a leader?
Yeah.
Is I just asked them, I said to my designer, I go, if people have to do this, then that should be a feedback loop to you that maybe the way you're working with them isn't working for them.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah, that's good.
So you could be upset or you could go like, where did I let down the expectations and rhythms and process and hey, put the thing here and I'll review it once a week and I'll get back to you with timelines. And if it doesn't work, cool. I'll give you the design standards so you can hire somebody. And I think that's the fun part of like getting better at buying back your time is understanding how to design these kind of structures and being the architect of it and not owning it. And that's really like what I've gotten good at in the business growing side of things is just like how, and that's honestly the fun part. Right. Like I want to design the architecture and then the rest of the people execute against it, but I don't want to own any of it. I don't want to be responsible every week to pull, you know, some financial report and map it against budget versus forecast and da, 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 da. I want to design that's a thing we should probably look at and what information we should look at to make insightful decisions, but running the play every week, rather not.
Yeah. You're a starter, not a finisher, right? I mean, have you heard that? Are you more of a starter or a finisher? And be honest with you.
No. So I'm a weird dude because I actually have a 7 Colby score for follow through, which is high. Oh. And I'm an 8 quick start. So I'm a weird, me and, you know, Dev Basu, same deal. Dev from Powered by Search. Him and I have the same Colby score and it's abnormal because we're high quick starts and high follow throughs. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
That's I think I'm a 4.
Because I was going to actually look ours up.
4, but a 4 follow through. You're a 5 and then follow through. But yeah, but that's really high. I've never heard of one that high.
I know.
So you actually are a starter and a finisher.
I'm a 5 and a 7. Yeah.
Oh, so
this is why I bring it up. Because in the book, I have this thing called the 10-80-10 rule, which is, and this is another way for people to like release without feeling out of control. Because I think that's the big mindset. One of the big beliefs is like, how do I let go? I mean, Jim, like, how do I let go of my inbox? Or Jamie, how do I let go of my meal prepper? Or how do I let go of my house? Like, these are things that people have very specific beliefs around and concerns. I get it. It's like, you're going to tell me somebody else should reply to all my emails? Yeah. That's so crazy. But the person emailed me. Oh, I know. I don't get how that would work. I know. I'm going to show you though. And once you see it, you might never be able to unsee it. But it's the same thing with like, you know, like we create structures for other people to design. So my whole thing is I want to be involved in the first 10%. And then I want to have a team own the outcome. That's the 80%. And at the very end, come back to me and show me how it's going to kind of connect and continue to be awesome. And that's like, I mean, a lot of people know who Gary Vaynerchuk is. Gary V has 25, 30 people outside his office called Team Gary. That's a different team than Vayner. That's a different team than his other company. It's literally his buyback team. Wow. 25 people, multiple millions of dollars a year in payroll. And that's his 10-80-10. He goes out there and he says, okay, guys, I got this crazy idea. Can somebody go and do some research around these videos? And I did this and just clip this and then put it together and then show it to me, right? Or, hey, I think we should do this thing on TikTok. I need you to schedule 2 hours, work with Tyler, my assistant, and we're going to do this kind of thing. And da-da-da. So like, it's the beginning, not the middle at all. And then the very end when, because he still publishes himself.
Okay.
Now I don't, I built the system around that. So I'm not the person clicking publish, but Gary wanted to. So he designed it. He has a text message, iMessage, group chat, all his videographers. It's kind of cool. I might do this at some point because I think it's pretty neat. They all take their edits and they publish it in the group chat, iMessage. And he goes through them and it's like, they're all vying. His seven videographers are vying for his attention. And he grabs them, downloads it to his phone, then uploads to TikTok, uploads to Instagram. And it's almost like a feedback loop for his videographers to know which ones he prefers.
Yeah,
exactly. And then they have a meeting about how to improve that, right? And then the other videographers are like, okay, he picked this one and this one. What did they, the way it opened, the cook, the stylistically, the edits, the way they did the capture. I'm going to do that my next one, see if he likes it. And I just find like, there's so many ways to scale. Like Tom Clancy did it in art. I talked about that in the book. Warren Buffett has done it in business at the highest level.
Sure.
Oprah's done it. Branson's a great example. Like he's Branson, Richard Branson's a billionaire. Every other billionaire wants to be like. And I will tell you, because I've spent, this is where a lot of the executive assistant stuff came from, was watching him operate with his assistant, Helen. And she lives with him. And he set the rules. He said, look, you need to travel with me. So she kind of foregoes her personal life to travel with Richard around the world. And they have breakfast every morning. And that breakfast is when she brings to him only the things she doesn't know how to route. And wow. Then the rest of the day, he goes with us skiing and she does all the routing. He doesn't do emails. He doesn't do anything. 400 companies, multi-billion. So like we're allowed to set parameters for how people interface with us. We're allowed to say, you know what? Inbox zero. How about zero inbox?
Yeah. I like
that. Like, could that work? Like, is that a thing? I don't know. What would need to be true? Or like, hey, I no longer, like today I was with the sales team. I got on a call. My sales director was like, hey, can you give me an hour to just like review some stuff and just motivate the sales team? I was like, 100%. I get on the call and I was just like, send me your pipeline. I want to look at it. And then they sent me the link to the HubSpot. And I laugh because I don't have a login to HubSpot. Because I refuse to.
Yeah.
You know, a long time ago, I learned if I don't have a login, I can't do anything. So it was actually like a solution to a problem.
I love it.
Yeah, like I have an account there. My assistant knows how to log into it. I just don't.
But she
and
can
in that way,
it. And she
yeah, you just
it.
Yeah, you literally just change your password and tell people not to give it to you, and then it sets like if you know it's like you gotta if you don't trust yourself because I have so many clients that are technical marketing nerds, geniuses, salespeople, and they here's what I've learned is your number one strength becomes your Achilles heel to grow.
Yeah, yes. You're right
because it's the last thing you'll give away. And it's the thing you'll be most critical of. And it becomes the bottleneck to your next level.
Yes. It's a good lesson.
Yeah. Definitely so I'm very sensitive to that for me. So I'm always thinking about like, how do I force myself out of it? And then I'm a problem solver. So once the problems are created from that, then I can solve it. But I need to almost create the forcing function to create the new space. It's like saying to yourself, I will not run an errand for the next 30 days. I'm not going to do an errand. Like I'm not going to go to a store. I'm not going to walk into a store. Imagine if you said, I'm not walking into a store for 30 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you still got to live. How would you solve the problems, right? But you both, and just for what it's worth, as I've done this, both have to do it at the same time or it becomes not fair for one of you.
We've definitely done
well,
that.
He doesn't. Yeah. Like the only time he goes to a store.
Okay. You're already there, Jim. And Jamie's like, yeah.
Well, no,
you buy me chocolate and flowers. That's the only time you go into a store.
That's true. Chocolate and flowers at this one little boutique grocery. And then, to Jamie's credit, I mean, what's the thing that shipped? I guess it is.
We don't go into a store at all anymore.
But see, this is the thing. Like, yeah, people have heard that us talking about this right now and said, that's crazy. I couldn't even imagine. And they haven't created the forcing function of ship, of TaskRabbit, of DoorDash, of whatever. Like literally, we live in this world. They actually joke that Silicon Valley is assisted living for the millennials. Because literally, it's subsidized living, VC funded, like car wash, meal prep, house clean. Like literally, it's on your app, mobile stuff. Like pick me up and carry me around, wipe my bum. Like it's funny but
because you have to really negotiate within yourself, like understanding what's important. Because there are moments in which I catch myself being like, wow, my children aren't going to know what it's like to like it's an event. We went to the,
we took the day before Christmas. We wanted to trot. We're like,
let's go to the grocery store together. We
brought Maggie and Sammy. It was fun for about the first 15 minutes. Then, you know, Sammy,
it's like going to Disney.
We'll just leave it there. He was climbing shelves.
Hurricane.
But it was fun.
The occasional, but not, it's when it becomes mundane.
It's a choice, not a necessity.
Yeah, I might, instead of going to the grocery store and being rushed and yelling at my kids when they're touching, you know, not that I yell, but like if they're all over the place and here and run into stuff, instead I get to like not put shoes on them or not put them in the car. And instead we're at the park or in the pool or we're painting
doing
or they're
crafts.
Just like laying around reading, you know. And so, like you said, sometimes people say, well, gosh, what do? Or, oh, you just have butlers. Like, I'm choosing to do other things that I find great value.
You didn't buy the next Mercedes. Like, this is like real talk. My street, I live in an affluent neighborhood, and we may be the only family that has a dedicated house manager. And yet I see my neighbors complaining, but don't have time, don't have this. It's like, yeah, but you're choosing to deploy your capital on other stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? Like, you're just not prioritizing the whole point. Like, that's the, in my garage, I have like manifesto. And one of the questions is, what would you change if you couldn't retire? Well, the buyback principle was a byproduct of that. It's like, I don't want to retire. So it's like, well, what are all the things that I wouldn't enjoy doing? That's the red stuff in an audit. And then it's like, okay, what are the things that are the least valuable things that I'm doing? Because if I didn't have to do those, I can go work on new skills and beliefs and character traits to up-level my personal abilities. And that's, and if I max out that to the degree I want, then I get to go deploy it on having more time for my family. But this is a fun part. It also makes you more intentional, because if you spend the money to buy back the time, you ain't sitting on the couch on TikTok.
No,
right.
No, why?
No, you're because you know what it costs you to get that hour, 2 hours or 6 hours. So then it's cool, because it indirectly acts as a forcing function to be more intentional, because you want to get your money's worth. Like, this is the fun part that people have a hard time seeing until they're in it, is the tangential benefits, like secondary and third degree benefits of doing this, are things like you're pulling forward into this calendar year more.
Yeah.
Like, that's the cool part. Think about having an executive assistant that responds in real time to emails and requests on your time, and they can move things forward. Well, while you're on this call, they're processing that. They're pulling, I would guess, 2 to 3 months of activity forward into your time, right? Yeah. They're unemotional about your email. So think about all the times you've opened and closed and opened and closed and opened and closed an email 7 times when you should have just processed the first time. They don't have that. So they just processed it. So pulling things into your calendar year, you know, like the food thing, it's compliance on your nutritional plan, because you sat down in a moment of strength and you designed it and now you paid for it. So it's like, I don't love my meal prep. Like, I'm not like jonesing for it, but I'm going to eat it because I paid for it and I designed it and it's there and I don't have to make the decision. So there's like all these other things that are benefits, not directly about getting more time, but just living a higher quality life, because you're being intentional with how you deploy resources.
So true. Yeah.
That's so true.
The little that, well, and we've done a decent amount, probably not as much as you, but our adventures have grown. They really have. Our
family capacity.
Yeah.
Capacity.
Yeah, capacity to have them and do them, I think, if that's what.
And you'll be able to do them, and the empire grows. Like, this is the part.
Our business is definitely, yes. And that's one thing when you're saying, I'm like, wow, our business and holdings have grown. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Huge. Sure. So,
well, and two, not just that, but our capacity to do other things. So, like, we wouldn't have been able to bring in foster care or adoption, you know, bring in a fifth child.
Come on. Like, that's
helping the Waldorf school. And yeah, I mean, there's been great.
That is why I wrote this book. Let's be honest. I wrote this book so that people like yourselves can do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well,
I hope I inspire the world. Honestly, it's a movement I'm trying to create, to pull this forward into their life when they're in their 20s and 30s, not when they're 50 and 60 and 70. Like, I want them to hopefully be inspired to know this is not a someday I get to this place and I'm allowed to do this.
Right.
No. This is a now thing. If you have a business, like, have an executive assistant and take 70% of your calendar and just trust that they can do the same work you're doing. Just give them some guidance. Take that time, redeploy it on the business. And then maybe two or three hires from now, it's somebody that supports you in your home. And then all of a sudden you like never even dream of not doing the thing you're doing because it lights you up and it supports your family and it creates a lifestyle that's integrated that you just can't even imagine. And it's not you don't have to be a king. This is not complicated. Just defer some of these other life purchases and instead purchase time back for yourself. Right. I think that's the mission.
One thing that I love that you said a few minutes ago, talking about emotional, like your own email, you can get emotional because that's really what it is. If you're opening and closing it 7 times, you're emotional about it. And I even did that this morning, but the same thing with, you know, everything from, you know, even like firing people or letting people, you know, like, oh, my yard guy. Okay. We love our yard guy, you know, in case he listens. But past yard guys, like even our like yard guy in Costa Rica, I had somebody else let him go. And I feel like, because it was emotional. I'm like overpaying this guy. He's been there for 15 years, like whatever. But like, if it wasn't on my shoulder to watch what he's doing and to write his check and to, you know, it's like, let someone who enjoys doing those type things do those type things. And same goes with like food. If you're meal prep, you know, if someone else is meal prepping for you, you're not emotionally eating. I know we ate a lot better because I'm not like, oh, it's 5 o'clock. Like, which place on Uber Eats do I want to eat?
Totally. You know? And then you got all the options. Stuff. And then Uber Eats is smart. And they're like, hey, if you order in the next 6 minutes, you can add all these cool things. Like, and then you're like, well, that looks cool. Yeah. Let's add some bubble teas and some ice cream and some snacks at 7-Eleven. I mean,
yeah. It's the same thing. If you walk through the grocery store, I'm an emotional grocery shopper. Like I think I'm going to make all these elaborate, wonderful, amazing things. And two, I like sweets. So like, we're just going to buy all the things in the grocery store and throw
them. That's the hard part to convince somebody. That they're like, well, it's going to cost money. And I'm thinking, no. It's going to save you money.
I agree.
Mental 100%. Space, emotional shrapnel, bad decisions, got to fix it after. Like, there's so many things that people create in their life that they have to then fix. They don't even consider as waste. So it's like, it'll help clear out a lot of that and just move good stuff into your life so that you're actually producing more.
Yeah. And speaking of the email part too, when you were on stage and I emailed your assistant, what was so sweet and like, you can, she does a great job, you know, for me as an outsider in that moment, she responded. And I think it was something, and I even like played it back to you the other day. I'm like, we need to get somebody that does that. So she pretty much was like, I know Dan would love to talk to you. I'm like, oh, how did she know Dan loves me? That's amazing. But so she's, it was, you're on stage. Like, she doesn't know if you want to talk to me, but the way in which she like stroked that, like, I know Dan.
It may be a core principle. It is. There's literally it's 5 amazing. Core principles. Yeah. But again, what you said, Jim, what did I learn now that I didn't do before? I didn't understand how to invest in my people at that level.
Mm. Interesting.
I didn't understand that the ROI of me coaching my team the same way I coach my clients has a dramatic impact on everything, yeah. Right? So like sitting down and us talking about like, what does appreciating a reply? Because that's the core principle. It's like, no matter if it's a no, a yes, or maybe, the person receiving a reply that they emailed me, but and replies to, they're like, how you felt, Jamie? That was like, I want, so it's like, what does that look like? Well, tell them, you like search my inbox. You've seen me and Jamie in exchange and you know that I've been on their podcast. So like, of course I want to be on their podcast. Like, but these are all things that I have a whole chapter dedicated to doing that in the book. I just really hope if people are listening that they just try it, take a few $100, look at some tasks, buy back some time, play with it, then build.
I love it. Dan, we are privileged. I think I'm going to put it on social media.
I am actually.
Oh, don't. You're going to get me in trouble, Jim. Literally, if people have bought hundreds of copies and keep bugging me when they're coming. January 17th. So I'm not sure when this get published, but go check out the pre-orders though. Like buybackyourtime.com is the website. I've got all the templates that I mentioned in the book. I've got a bunch of bonus trainings. So good. The SOPs, right? The ones that I sent you, the admin, standard operating procedure, and the house manager is all going to be part of that. I'm pretty much giving away everything I've ever done that can support people because I want to, you know, I'm on a mission to create a movement and awesome. It's going to take a community.
Good. So we're talking about first week of January now. So we're only 2 weeks out. I definitely recommend everyone gets it. You guys have already seen interviews with Dan, heard about our work together. huge fan, been definitely groundbreaking for us. So I've already had some exposure. I can't wait to dive in. And hopefully our next conversation is in person, because as much as I
appreciate Nosara,
we got to get a Nosara live. We'll do that one.
Yes, sir. So, all right, guys. Appreciate you so much.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Say bye to Renee and the gang, and we'll talk to you soon, Dan. Great interview. Thanks again.
Well, right back at you guys. All right. Much love. Later.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.